Investigations done right take a long time. Case in point, the work of special counsel Robert Mueller, assigned to look into Russian efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential campaign. Mueller and his people are not journalists, but they are investigators, and the same basic principles of following people and paper trails are the modus operandi of investigative journalism. So it takes time and money, and commercial newsrooms don't have much of either these days. So we're seeing more nonprofit investigative journalism outfits, including one just announced in Oregon called Underscore, which grew out of an existing nonprofit called Investigate West. Lee Vandervoo, a longtime journalist, will be the managing editor of Underscore. Lee joined us just a couple of years ago to talk about her book on the seafood industry, The Fish Market. Lee, welcome back to The Exchange.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
So you have been the managing editor at Investigate West, which we partnered with a time or two. So explain what Investigate West is first.
Well, just one small note. I've been managing director, which is a slightly different role in a nonprofit. But Investigate West is a nonprofit journalism studio. It offers, just as you describe, investigative journalism projects for the Pacific Northwest. And we had a shop here in Oregon since 2014.
And so is Underscore a spinoff of Investigate West or unrelated? How did Underscore come to be?
We are indeed a spinoff. We are the former Oregon investigative team of Investigate West. And we decided after some discussion this summer that we would be better off being two organizations so we could have more local focus here, have a local board, a little more of a local community support. We wanted to build that in.
So more of an Oregon kind of focus, that was the general reason for creating Underscore?
It was, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So give us now, if you would, the broader picture. I set it up a bit for you, but explain the rise of nonprofit investigative journalism outfits and what's been going on.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, you know, I think most people know by now that the for-profit news industry has been bleeding cash for a long time, probably since about 2001. There's been an enormous drop-off in the amount of revenue that used to come from advertisements in newspapers, like the days, you know, when the big Meyer and Frank flyer would flop out of your newspaper, or you'd have like a phone book's worth of ads. Those are the things that actually paid for investigative journalism. The newspapers often took the lead in those types of projects. You know, that money isn't there anymore. It's moved to digital markets. And it just creates this hole where the type of public service journalism that's really important in communities is much, much, much harder to fund. So there's been a rise of nonprofit journalism shops across the nation, the world, really, that are looking to fill that gap.
And so the migration of advertising to digital hasn't helped the newspapers through their digital entities as much as they might have hoped, it sounds like.
No. It's such a tiny, tiny piece. You know, there's so many places for that money to go now. Just think of all the places you can spend money online, Google Ads, Facebook, Craigslist. You know, it's just a much more decentralized market, and newspapers can't capture it like they used to.
Well, and you just mentioned Craigslist. We haven't even talked about the classified ads that used to appear in the newspapers, which are just about nil now, because that was a great place for the newspapers to make money back in the day. But once Craigslist began giving those away for free, why pay for it in the newspaper when all the people are going to find you there anyway at Craigslist?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Craigslist is so much more focused, you know, for what people need. It's searchable, so you don't have to read every ad anymore. You can just type in what you're looking for, and it pops the results back at you. It's just a much better deal for people.
How rare, then, has investigative journalism become in the for-profit media industry?
Well, I think the for-profit, in large part, has grown up around this idea that we have to start finding a way to replace the important public service journalism work that newspapers and other types of media used to perform. And you know, there's been similar downturns in revenues to television, to radio. Again, it's just that the advertising market's becoming more decentralized. So I think nonprofit media is an answer to that. It's certainly not brand new. There have been big public, nonprofit shops that have existed in the U.S. for 20 or 25 years, a couple big ones, one on each coast, the Center for Investigative Reporting and the Center for Public Integrity. But now you see, I think, a couple hundred at this point in North America, and they include big names like ProPublica and New York and The Intercept, which you hear a lot about. doing big, groundbreaking journalism. But we also have a lot of small regional shops that are focused on their communities.
And so how can these places afford to exist because they're certainly not selling advertising, I would presume.
Right. No, we do it. We do it through grant writing, and we do it through fundraising. We're looking to, function like any other nonprofit where we depend on major donors. We have events. We have a membership campaign. And again, you know, we look to foundations and grant writing to supplement.
Lee VanderVu is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a longtime journalist, a previous guest talking about her book, The Fish Market, now talking about the new Underscore Media Collaboration, which is a spinoff of Investigate West to provide investigative journalism for Oregon, more focused on Oregon itself. You can join the conversation on the Exchange as we talk about journalism, investigative journalism, and Underscore specifically. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Lee, if you would, give us an example of an issue or a set of issues you'd covered or managed the coverage of, and how long it takes to get from earliest research to publication.
Sure. One of my favorites actually is a collaboration that Investigate West did with Jefferson Public Radio in 2015, where we put a team together across both newsrooms to take a hard look at the future of forests. So everything from wildfire to carbon markets to private forests, privately owned forests, and what the future was. It was a really cool project, and I think it sort of gets at the heart of what we're trying to do here. What the problem that we've identified, that everybody's identified, is that no single newsroom really has the resources to be able to do these kinds of projects on their own. They are hugely expensive. The last collaboration we just ran up here in the Portland area on concussion health, that I would put the dollar figure somewhere around $125,000, and that's not labor. That's just it's some labor, but it's also contractors and needs to actually execute the project. You know, things like travel costs, public records, data analysis. This isn't money that's just sitting on a desk somewhere in a lot of newsrooms now. So how we can do it is we can come together with other media organizations, identify really specific projects that will be beneficial in our communities, and put together a team between sometimes two, sometimes three, maybe more media partners, where everybody just sort of puts on the table what they can do, and then we fill the gaps and we offer some project management and data assistance to get those projects done.
Yeah, the forest series was a big deal for us. I mean, because if I'd had Liam Moriarty do that by himself, it probably would have taken him 6 months at a minimum. And yet we ended up losing him for maybe 2 weeks to be able to cooperate with the folks at Investigate West to get that piece done for us, series of pieces.
Oh, that's great to hear, actually. Yeah, that's what we're shooting for. You know, we don't want to pull people out of newsrooms for longer than those newsrooms can handle, but we want to help them be able to deliver important content locally.
Lee, let's talk about the flip side. I mean, as solid investigative journalism has disappeared from commercial newsrooms, obviously somebody's stepped in to fill the void. But, I mean, what effects do we see societally when there is less investigative journalism going on?
Well, you know, I think journalism is a constitutionally protected practice for a reason. It was sanctioned in our Constitution because it allows us to function as a press on as a check on government, on all three branches of the government. And so I think with the decline of that, you do have, a lowered ability to be able to do that. It's hard to say, you know, what the long-term effects will be. I think certainly we've gotten to a place in society where maybe it's simply the decentralization of media, but where we can't as communities even agree upon a shared set of facts. I think that has a lot to do with the availability of quality information and with people's ability to identify what are good sources of information in these times.
We talked to a researcher a few months ago, and I think you might have seen the piece, too, about the fact that in communities where the papers are still robust and do some investigative work, the public spending is less.
That's interesting.
It's a really interesting combination of factors there, where if there's pretty solid coverage of local government, the local government is perhaps a little more reluctant to spend money quite as freely. But that's just something I wanted to bring up here. We're talking to Lee Vandervoo, who's going to be the managing editor at the new Underscore Media Collaboration, a nonprofit newsroom focused specifically on journalism stuff, a spinoff from Investigate West. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. Questions, comments, welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So I see you as managing editor and Jacqueline De La Harpe as executive director of Underscore. And how much staff beyond you two?
Not much. Right now we are four people. We are contractors. So we're starting up with the support of Meyer Memorial Trust. They gave us a planning grant to become our own organization, and we'll have that in effect till June. So we're looking to raise our money to staff up after June is our official launch. And it's a small group. My role is managing the collaborations that we have here in Oregon. We also do Indian Country reporting, and we have Rebecca Claren working with us to lead our efforts there. We're retooling that program a little bit, and we have a reporter on the ground in the Portland area named Sergio Olmos, who's working on our long-form stories, and Jacqueline as our ED. So pretty tight group, but very efficient.
So to the Indian Country coverage in particular, is this an underserved section of society where media is concerned?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. At Investigate West, we had a concerned citizens approach us many years ago on highlighting this as a concern and asking us, is this a problem that we can help solve in the nonprofit sector? I want to say it was in 2016 at Investigate West, we started a pilot for Indian Country coverage, just kind of kicking the tires on how to address that. We wanted to go at it in kind of three different ways. We wanted to be able to structure collaborations that would better afford Indian Country reporting, because it's incredibly expensive, just given, you know, the amount of travel involved. And also, we wanted to see if we could find a way to distribute those series in a way that could elevate the voice of Native peoples. And then just also provide more intense, thoughtful, deep coverage of Native issues. So we spent about a year and a half doing that, and now we're just kind of looking at, okay, what did we learn? How do we move forward in this program? We're very serious about continuing that work. Right now we have Rebecca Claren doing a pretty intensive research project, just compiling her findings from her work on the pilot, and also just talking with national experts about where do we best fit and how do we go forward.
You were talking about the cost of investigations, and particularly in Indian Country, where you're going to have to travel a long way. But you talked about the work on concussions at Investigate West that ran up something like $125,000. I want to point out some of the features of that reporting, too, because it's not just about football. It's about things like girls' soccer. And one notable headline I noticed was, is there a safe header in soccer? And what was the answer ultimately no?
Actually, no, there's a yes to that. There's a yes to that. It's more about actually body contact, we found, that was causing a lot of concussions, and it wasn't so much head-to-head, although, you know, you really want to avoid those. But there was a lot of elbow-to-head, and that just, through national research, kind of showed us that there are actually some practices, and experts tell us this too, folks who are working with athletes, that there are ways that you can leave the ground and not crack somebody on your way up. And so, you know, they're working, I think, now, especially with girls, to kind of keep their arms in. Reason being that girls are much more prone to concussion injuries. They just don't have the, well, there's a lot of theories about it, and it's really not clear why, but one of the working theories among others, and it may be several factors, is to do with neck muscle development. When a girl gets hit in the head, it may have they may be less able to sort of brace for that impact.
We have a great question here from John and Eugene, who sent an email in. He says, does your guest see any likelihood that consumers of news will eventually find it worthwhile to pay for their news? Is this likely to happen at a level that will support investigative journalism? Thanks for that, John.
I hope so, you know, and that's what we'll have to learn, you know, through this. Certainly we see evidence that that's the case. There's much more philanthropic support for investigative journalism than there was 10 years ago. We certainly see, for example, like Voice of San Diego is a wonderful example of a nonprofit news organization that has just a tremendous membership program. So they're kind of demonstrating that, yes, it's possible. But we have to also think about bringing people into the news in ways that we haven't before. They're no longer just passive consumers. They're not just reading. You know, they're coming to events with us. They're spending time with us in ways that they haven't before. Personally, I think it's a great thing. It's not just like an extra thing we have to do. I think it informs the reporting really well to have this kind of audience interaction that we didn't have before. And hopefully, you know, with that sort of a focus, we do find that people want to come along with us.
So it sounds like a more visible societal role, where instead of just publishing your stuff and waiting for the letters to come in to tell you how you did on it, you're actually out there talking to people about the issues involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're kind of front-end talking to people about the issues involved, too, just trying to gather input about what is it people really want to know about and how do we best tell that story? You know, how do they like to read? Is it that they want to read or do they want, you know, some sort of searchable app out of this project? Maybe it's not even presented in the way that we used to present it. So there's a lot to think about. And the more we talk to people, I think the more we understand what they need.
We'll take a couple more minutes here with Lee Vandervoo, a longtime journalist, the managing editor for the new Underscore Media Collaboration coming to Oregon. As she mentioned, it'll be more or less official after the middle of this year. It's a spinoff of Investigate West. You can join the conversation as we talk about journalism and nonprofit organizations like Underscore on the rise now, as for-profit newsrooms have less time and money available to do things like investigative journalism. Join us with your thoughts, questions, comments at 800-838-3760 over the phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Some of your work in recent years, I noticed, has focused on public records and laws and their availability. And I just wonder, you mentioned the cost of obtaining records as part of the overhead that gets involved in investigative journalism. How challenging, cost aside, can it be just to get the documents you need for investigative work in Oregon?
Oh, gosh, it's so hard. it's so hard. I'm a big nerd for this stuff. You know, we don't think have the kind of laws that we really need for getting hands-on documents in Oregon. Last year, we had a legislative change that made it so you actually can get a response to a public records request in 5 business days, which I think is an improvement, and potentially production of those records in 15 business days or some kind of time estimate, which is great. I mean, it used to be you could submit them and just, you know, wonder what was going to happen, maybe nothing. You know, now that's not possible anymore. But we really need fee reform in this state. You know, the Concussion Project was a great example. We had one school district charge us almost $3,000. I think it was like $29.97 for records. And when I asked some questions about, okay, what are we going to get back here? Actually, no one knew. It was just this random flat.
They picked the number out of the air.
It was like, oh, this will take us 40 hours. It's like, actually, it seems clear that you really don't know how long it'll take because you can't tell me anything about what you're providing. I mean, it's just silly. That kind of stuff has got to stop.
I noticed that there was a complaint on one of the, I think it was at Investigate West, about a bed bug secrecy law in Oregon.
Yeah. We have all these funny little exemptions to our public records law. So, you know, that's the law that says if you're a citizen or any person can have records from the government. This is a democracy. And you know, if you want to find out what's going on, you just ask for the records. But many people don't realize we have 576, I think, at last count, exemptions to that law. And the bedbug thing is one of those. And it was just silly. It was like people had the idea, you know, if we have a program to mandatorily report the location of bedbugs, which seems smart to me for controlling their proliferation, we need to keep confidential those records because we wouldn't want to harm, like, the hotel industry. That's just nuts. Like, I don't want to go anywhere where there's bedbugs in the bed, and I think people should have that right. But it's an example, and an extreme example, of the kinds of things that sometimes slide through, you know, with good intention. There was some good intention behind that law, actually. There's a little more detail than I can get into on the show, but, you know, the effect was not good, and yet it lives.
Right. All right. Well, there is a public records advocate for Oregon now. We did talk to her a few weeks ago, and she's already recommended some further changes in law. So there's that going on at the same time that we're looking at the rise of the Underscore Media Collaboration, where Lee Vander Voo will be the managing editor. Look for stuff out of Underscore through other media along about the middle of this year and beyond. Lee, good to talk to you again. Thanks for joining us on The Exchange, and best of luck.